Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast. This is episode number 19. In today's show, we're going to be discussing undiscussables. This is a term that we've used before in previous podcasts, so you will be familiar with it, but we thought it might be useful for us to look into it in a little bit more depth. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking about it from the point of view of a facilitator. So instead of the coaching approach, we're going to have the facilitator approach. So where does undiscussables come from? Well, it was a term first used by Chris Argyris in his book Overcoming Organizational Defenses. And he built it around the idea that most of us want to feel in control in the short term. Well, most of the time anyway, and therefore we tend to avoid anything defensive. So we don't bother actually discussing the thing that we really is burning away at us. And it's around the idea that there's a belief from people that they can't discuss these things without creating defensive or other negative consequences or unintended consequences. And so we don't bother. We just let them fester underneath. And, you know, there are many reasons for it. We're worried that maybe we lose our job. And we're worried that we're going to undermine somebody's authority. There's usually some sort of fear that's built around it. So how do we actually get round the issue of discussing things that we'd rather not discuss? What we would recommend is that if you're going to discuss these things, then you choose one thing at a time, but you really should use a facilitator for it. They can act independently for the benefit of the whole of the group, and they can act objectively, and they allow the leader in the group to be able to sit alongside the people in the team rather than in front of them. So it's less confrontational in that way. I think on reflection, when I look back, you know, how many times have we not said the things that we really wanted to say? And if we had, and we'd have been able to go about it in a way that didn't make us feel so defensive, God, we would have made so much many better decisions, and we would have solved problems easier, quicker, and actually got to the problem first rather than going and skirting around the edges of it.
Just jump in on there, John. I think if this is something that, you know, you do feel like you might be wanting to start, but you're not sure if the trust is there, I'd have a read of Patrick Lencioni's book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. It's a really great read, and he actually does touch upon undiscussable issues without really labelling them as such. And while you were explaining it and talking about that as an intro, John, I was smiling to myself and just, you know, thinking back to moments in my, you know, organisational career and history. And I'm just thinking back to how many times did I sit in Q&As with the CEO or very senior leaders, you know, those all-hand meetings where there's probably about 200 of you in a team, and you're nudging each other going, ask this. And you're like, I don't. You know, and it's just like you really want to ask the boss if they think what they're doing is right, or have they thought about X, Y and Z, or how long are they going to stay around? And you just don't ask the question.
Yeah.
And that is an undiscussable issue.
Yeah, and you can't get past the fact that that's in your head.
And that is the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That, if you are wondering to yourself, what are undiscussable, that is it in a nutshell. But make no mistake about it, the undiscussable issues co-create the culture, the organisational culture, and massively influence the climate of your organisation and how people work together. So in today's conversation, we are going to tackle the elephant in the room, the beast that is undiscussable issues. And we're going to look at how, as a leader, you can approach them under this idea of of ground rules for working together. The format of the podcast today is going to be a little bit different. We're going to have a very short, sharp discussion around the three leadership essentials. And then this week, because this subject is one that we will definitely put with a health warning that it has to be done with facilitation, we're going to change the coaching approach to the facilitation approach for today, where we'll follow up with our fictional character, George, the CEO of our organisation, as he's starting to deal with some of the wider cultural implications of his organisation and perhaps how some of the undiscussable issues could be contributing to some productivity issues and leadership issues that he's facing.
In the leadership essentials then, your first leadership essential is respect the fear that accompanies this exercise and always use a facilitator. A facilitator can act independently of the whole group and for the benefit of the whole group, and that helps improve how people act without having to deal with the actual topic and under discussion. And so we would warn you against just suddenly discussing perceived undiscussable issues without using other ground rules, assumptions and core values. Assuming your team is, as I say, intact and you are confident that people will come to the party with objective views, then allowing people to forward undiscussable issues anonymously is going to be absolutely critical to the success of the exercise. The statement needs to be describing it in enough detail that anyone in the room will be able to understand it. Now, if someone's behaviour is part of the undiscussable, then what we would recommend is that you refer to that person by job title and not by name, because the undiscussable is intended as a statement of the problem and not as an attack on another person.
I think the thing to point out here is the thing with undiscussable issues is they are often harder, if not as hard, for the person that is describing the issue to put forward as it is for the leader or the person that's contributing it to hear. And this is why a facilitator is not only important, but it's crucial. The whole almost process of this and the success of it depends on creating a system of or a place of safety where everybody feels that they can set aside their, I guess, biases. Is that the word? And the facilitator's job is to ensure that that environment of safety is maintained and it's labelled if it crumbles. And, you know, when I've been in an organisation or that we've seen this coming up and down many, many times, and if it's done badly, it can be more detrimental, really, can't it?
Totally,
and,
yeah.
And so it has to be supported by this understanding of what people are entering into and ensuring that the facilitator's role is to maintain the safety of the group.
Yeah, and I think the other thing as a leader, it allows you to sit alongside the rest of your team rather than in front of them. You know, you're an integrally part of that team. And the facilitator can have a very objective view about what's actually what the topic that you're discussing.
Yeah, I mean, we've done this with multiple organisations, and we have to put ourselves in a brave position whereby it's human nature, hearing some of this as a leader, to jump and defend and explain and justify what has just been described as an undiscussable, versus to sit, listen and try and put yourselves in that person's shoes and to see and feel how it might come across in another person's version of the truth.
Yeah.
And that trying to get people to a place where they are just listening and are curious, it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
And a leader has to be very brave and vulnerable to even put themselves in that place. And then to stay in that place is even harder. But that's where the magic happens.
So that's your leadership essential number one, just to respect the fear and probably quite a lot of the emotions that are around an exercise like that. So always you as a facilitator. Leadership essential number two, reflect And take notice of your initial response to each undiscussable as you read them aloud. So once you have your undiscussable, let's think about actually what your response is internally. What's the first thing that jumps into your mind? So you've got to listen for what is said and what is also not said.
And a lot of that can be your visceral and physiological response. Does the fight and fight or flight mechanism trigger? Fight would be jumping to a defensive standpoint. Flight would be to discard it and go, oh, no, that's that group of people. They're always unhappy. And how often do, you know, when you get your employee engagement survey results and there's the odd verbatim comment that perhaps criticise the group and yet it's dismissed.
Yeah.
Make no mistake, when you hear a leader dismiss a comment as, oh, there's always a group that are unhappy, or somebody always says something negative, that is your flight response triggering. It's too hard to hear, so I'm going to pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah. And if your first move is to do this for the first time, to discuss undiscussables, really would recommend that you choose one and you just stick with that and go through the process. And we're going to give you an example of that with George in the facilitator approach. So that is your second leadership essential, is just to think about your initial response to the undiscussable, what's said, what's not said. Third leadership essential is challenge ideas and assumptions and not people. So it's not an attack on what somebody says, but challenge the idea and maybe any assumptions or inferences that they may have come across, and get curious about finding out where they're coming from. You've got to be aware of untested attributions, and these are especially around people's motives. So it might be a good idea to discuss with your coach when employing them in a facilitation role by, as I say, taking one discussable at a time. So those are your three leadership essentials for undiscussables. And this is really about us giving you an idea that this is something that you might want to tackle, but always take professional advice and consultation before you tackle it.
You don't want to open this can of worms by yourself for the first time, basically, is what we're saying. So welcome to the updated version of the coaching approach. Today we're going to focus on the approach that a facilitator would take when tackling undiscussable issues. So we're returning to our fictional characters of George, Janet and John in this in today's facilitator approach. And at the end of episode 15, we left George after he'd been really working through this idea of the tyranny of positivity with his executive coach. And it's really got him thinking, that combined with his work on internal communications, around what is going on with his leadership team, his senior leadership and his people leadership team, and really reflecting on what are some of the cultural artifacts that he's seeing in play out in his organisation in the form of undiscussable issues, which are having impacts on productivity and things he's hearing on the grapevine as a whole. So George has worked with his coach, but to also bring in a facilitator to safeguard the group of his leadership team to surface in a safe way some of these undiscussable issues. So George has called a meeting with his teams, and he's basically wanting to raise what might be some difficult issues, and he wants to get a sense of the group's reactions whilst using a facilitator. Now, George is, as we've mentioned, even back in the early days when we first met George, he's got high emotional intelligence, he wants to do the right thing, he's got a lot of quite rich experience as been a senior leader, but he's not immune to stumbling blocks. And this year, more than any, he's found himself in some scenarios where he just doesn't quite know what to do, and this is one of them. So George has been very open. He's been a bit more vulnerable, and he said he doesn't want to put anybody in this on the spot, but he's explained that his ambition for the group is to get his leadership team working better. And he's asked Scaffold Coaching to come in and use their services as facilitators to help his leadership team as a group. And so, you know, he wants to give the team some time to sit side by side where he can sit with them as part of the group, not as the leader. And more importantly, he has stressed that he's going to try and postpone or hold his own judgment. He wants to invite some independent thinking and to kind of see what's happening at a systemic view. And he has asked permission from everybody before they've even attended that they're okay with this. And being a leader who believes in role modelling and demonstrating the importance of going first, George has volunteered to voice one of his own undiscussable issues that he's noticed before he asks his team to be vulnerable enough to share theirs. So George addresses his team and he says, here's what I'm thinking about. What I've noticed is that whenever we have a consensus decision making in our leadership team meetings, one of you as my senior leadership team always comes to me after the meeting and tells me that I need to rethink the decision. And George then goes on to explain that everybody on his SMT has at least on one occasion in the last year done this. They've made a decision collectively as a group, and then they've come to him later and said, I'm just not sure, but I didn't voice it in the meeting. And George has noticed that the negative consequences of this for the group is that there is not much group cohesion. It's slowing down the organisation's ability to meet its goals. It's not putting the client at the centre of everything. There's still a kind of us and them and an internal tussle for resources. And it's eroding the group's ability to work as a team. And they are the senior management team.
As the facilitator, I then ask the team members, what is it that's led them to go and see George after the meeting instead of raising the concerns in the meeting? Why wouldn't they just do that?
So Janet, who having been coached a bit herself around her directive leadership style, does feel comfortable enough to put a hand up. And she explains that, you know, George is quite a formidable advocate, making it hard to respond to him in a full group meeting. And a couple of members also agree.
So I'm, as the facilitator, a little curious here. So if George is, as you are reasoning, Janet, and a few of you are sort of confirming, I'm thinking I don't understand why responding to him after the meeting in a one-to-one is going to be any easier, because I'm sort of curious around the idea that at least in a meeting you would have a potential supporter with you. And so I'm sort of asking what are they missing here?
So at this point, John chimes in and he begins to explain, building on Janet's earlier comment, that it isn't George that was the concern per se, rather it was a combination of other concerns for him. And so John articulates that he feels that the SMT members have a competition between each other, and then what they're wanting to back their own idea. And this means that there's a fear of each other's ideas being shot down in the full team meeting. So going to George after the meeting stood a better chance of having the decision go their way rather than in front of the whole team. So some interesting dynamics at play there. And then he also talks about that there's also a reluctance to be fully open and honest with one another about their differences, because they were afraid of hurting one another's feelings. And by going to George after the meeting, they could almost remain respectful and compassionate rather than having to wear their differences, their difference of opinion openly. So almost I'm sensing here, John, that there's a fear of conflict within the group or a fear of unhealthy conflict in the group.
Yeah, I asked them what happened then when they went to see George in his office after a decision had been made. And a few of the members of the group explained that they provided additional information that George didn't have, and they've added their concerns. And to which George then tells the rest of the group that they need to hear this additional information, and therefore he asks them to go and raise it at the next meeting. And George agrees and confirms that this is the case. So I asked the team members, what do you infer when George tells you that? What do you read from the fact that George wants the additional information to go back to the group? They say that George is typically and implicitly endorsing their point of view on the subject because he's telling them that the group needs to hear their additional information.
Whereas George, though, says, I'm not endorsing your point of view, I'm simply trying to honour the process and how we agree we would each reach these decisions consensually. And it turns out that when the group go back with this additional information, sometimes the information did change the decisions, but more often the discussion continued and the same decision was reached anyway, but with greater commitment than before.
And in continuing to adopt this curious nature, as the facilitator, I'm trying to understand when this behaviour continues, how it contributes to maintaining the pattern. So he said that at least each of the people in his team had come back every time a consensual decision was made and tried to see him and tried to change him on a one-to-one basis. And I'm curious as to understand why George would continue with this pattern of behaviour.
Especially when George is, in his undiscussable, explained that it's making decision making take longer. And I'm sensing, again, we'd have to test this for undiscussable, but George is getting frustrated that decision making's so long. But why is this happening? And why is George continuing to contribute to this behaviour?
So we find out from George that he thinks it was his job to hear people out. He always has got an open door policy. And so he didn't bother telling people that this process and this pattern of behaviour was frustrating him. And sometimes he wondered whether he was contributing to the problem himself. So occasionally they even go to the point of leaving the meeting thinking that that's actually going to help the situation. So what can we draw from these discussions and the intervention of the facilitator? How exactly has discussing what was previously regarded as an undiscussable issue now become helpful? And where would we go from here? So there's a few steps here to move the team's story along to helping the team understand the system it's unintentionally created. So step one is getting people where they can tell their story, asking each individual and asking where others can add their different perspectives, where you can search to seek for an agreement to what happened, and to try and identify where members cannot agree. So we would ask about that initially in step one. Get them to each individually tell their story as to what happened.
Step two would be to identify the key decision points. We won't, of course, list them all here, but as an example of a key decision point, when the team choose to approach George after the team has already reached a consensus, and when George responded to the first team member who approached him, identifying what was the decision point,
yeah,
and that you're deviating from what was agreed.
Into step three then. So let's think about discussing the values and the assumptions and the inferences that the team members used. Not actually what they did, but what was it that they were actually implying and what was the behaviour that sits behind it. And you can use that then as a basis for their decisions and the actions that they take. So you might ask why the team chose to avoid conflict in a team setting and to go and see George personally.
Yeah, and you know what I think's interesting here is, what is it about the SMT members that seem to almost feel they want to see George on that one-on-one level? What is the value exchange there of getting personalised one-on-one attention from the CEO? And I think that might come down to something to do with status,
yeah,
in the SCARF model that we talked about in earlier podcasts. And I'd also be asking in the assumptions, especially given the last podcast, that we have this feeling that George needs to be needed at work because perhaps things in his personal life aren't going as well as they could be. But what is this behaviour that George is demonstrating? How is that giving him a feeling of being needed? And how is he almost, I guess, even though it's annoying and frustrating him, he's getting something from it by feeling that he's been singled out and that they're going to him on a one-on-one level. Yeah,
which is why he tends to continue with that pattern.
Yeah, and it's almost, I'd be asking, George seems like he's got an open door policy and he seems like he's very pro the decision's been making consensually. I'd argue that George's behaviour is not demonstrating that. He's saying it, but his behaviour is showing that there's a way around that.
Yeah, so that's step three. Discuss the values, the assumptions, the inferences.
Step four, identify the consequences of the key decisions, such as a commitment and quality to the decision making. I guess in this case, how long it's taking or what's been wasted. And John, you and I, when we sit in these facilitation meetings with really senior leaders, we'll quite often say, as an example, what is this meeting costing the organisation? Yeah. Just in pure hour per head, all those reworking and decisions and long senior management team meetings, it all has a cost.
Yeah, and George is asking them all to come back with the additional information and go through it all over again. And so the circle just continues.
Cost of actual resource, but also opportunity cost of innovation that's foregone.
Sure. Step five, think about creating a causal story and testing it with the team. So this is a little bit of a different way of dealing with it. So in our example, this would probably start with something like team members entering team meetings with the belief that the goal of the meeting is to persuade other team members and adopt their position on the strategic issue. And you continue to build the causes in the story. So what are the causes that are happening when you consider this one undiscussable issue?
Step six would be ask what points in the story could you have significantly improved the outcomes if you had been able to act or think differently, both in the moment and after the event.
Yeah, and having gone through those previous five steps, that actually becomes quite easy for people to identify because they've got the causes and they've seen what the actual
assumptions
meeting
are, yeah,
consisted of, and the assumptions and the inferences. So last of all, step seven, finally explore what happens, what needs to happen for change to take place. Amongst a few things, the team agree to raise their concerns in the meeting rather than go to George afterwards, you know, in an attempt to try and influence the process and the outcome. They also agree that when they see other members offering consensus that doesn't actually seem that genuine, and they can find examples of that, and they're allowed to then ask about it in the meeting and explore the causes of whether that is genuine behaviour or not. George, in this case, agrees that if a team member does come to him after the meeting, he's going to tell them he is frustrated that they've turned up at his door, and he's going to adopt a more curious approach about what led them not to follow the team's new agreement.
So what I'm hearing there is it's about putting time aside within that meeting to label and acknowledge what previously happened and proactively put in a solution and almost check in with each other on where we all are,
yeah,
at.
Yeah, so
and how we're feeling about that decision.
Around the issue of actually we've had a full facilitated session here about the one undiscussable thing. So at least we've got some actions and some ground rules for us to use when we're, as a senior team, trying to get to making consensual decisions.
So this provides a really good, a useful framework for the team, but this is only one indiscussable issue on what I expect is a myriad of other issues. And I just think it's quite important to note that at this point, the facilitator would not be just doing this exercise singularly with this team. They would also be on the side working at why is the trust not there between the team members? Why are they avoidant of healthy conflict in the team? And what is it about each of them that they don't feel confident enough to voice this? So that might be a separate piece of work that was going on at the side. And this facilitation exercise provides a framework to practice that in.
Yeah, they are looking to learn on a mutual basis rather than operating in a sort of a command and control way. So, you know, you're moving this team into a really, really powerful area by them looking at their own behaviour, their assumptions and what have you, in terms of how do they learn better.
Yeah, and I think that's the magic here, but that's also the really difficult thing to do here. This facilitator can't fix this issue for the team, and you can't go on a course or a team building exercise and this be fixed overnight. It's a journey of mutual learning that at times will feel difficult, but you can only move as fast as the team in its entirety.
Yeah, absolutely, Rachel, and I think it ties up nicely with the podcast that we did on goals, and these are sort of mastery goals in terms of each individual within that team, is that they learn what is it they learn from it, from their behaviour, yeah, and their interactions with one another.
Yeah, and how can they ladder their personal aims, if you like, to the organisation's purpose and a shared set of values with which they can operate as a leadership team of this organisation.
Yeah.
So that's it for this week. It's a bit of a different one, a bit more of a sombre one, the undiscussable issues. Hope you've found it useful. Hope it's got you thinking in different ways. As always, if anything wasn't clear in that, or you're thinking like this is definitely something we could use help on with our team, please get in touch. Drop us a note at leaders@scaffoldcoaching.com and we will get back in touch with you. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast. We hope you've got a lot out of this. If you'd like to read up a bit more on any of the content that you've heard in today's podcast, be sure to check out our website, scaffoldcoaching.com.